And we are back with episode 835 of The Critical Myth. John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and boy, we've had a busy show week this week.
That's right, we're actually going to have three episodes. Now, what we originally did is when we were recording our second episode, which was the episodic discussion one, we just kept going and going and going, and there was never a really natural place for us to just say, hey, shouldn't we stop and do a third show?
And then I got carried away, John, I'm sorry.
We all did. So, yeah, what we wound up doing is when I was editing in, I actually split it in two. So this introduction is essentially to say, yep, we're picking right up in the middle of a conversation. So we're not exactly even sure where this is going to drop in. But Gary, why don't you just give a quick spoiler alert just before we kind of break back into the conversation?
Oh yeah, as we talk about shows, including I think we're going to focus a bit on the DCW for a little while. We're going to go into things that have happened, people who have lived, died, and were otherwise affected in their lives. We might even talk about a transforming car. However, when we do this, we are just doing it to have a frank and honest discussion. If we are spoiling anything for anyone, we apologize in advance, but we feel it's important to not gloss over some of the more important events of these shows. So we want to share them with you. And as always, you're welcome to share your own opinions on anything we discuss by emailing us or contacting us otherwise.
Very good. That's just about as thorough as we could ever imagine we needed. So, all right, we are going to go ahead and jump right into the rest of this week's episodic discussion. Thank you for listening. Now, next on the list is a show that I know that we both like, and that is Star Wars Rebels as it begins its fourth and final season. And we had two-part episodes, Heroes of Mandalore and In the Name of the Rebellion, two very different episodes. Now, what did you think of Heroes of Mandalore, Gary?
Can they just put it on the big screen? I'll go pay for tickets for this. This series is just to know already that it's coming to an end at this season. I won't say I'm as heartbroken as when they pulled this crap with Rebels, but I mean with Clone Wars. But oh my gosh, This is movie quality stuff here. I mean, it really is. The storylines are great. You have, you know, the whole Star Wars family dynamic playing into this with the Mandalorians. You know, this sort of who's going to lead them going forward. Their own little mini, war against the Empire going on a planetary level. And it's just incredible. You have this whole, not to mention you have the whole passing of the Dark Blade issue of who's the rightful leader. And, you know, obviously, one day I'll remember all these names. Obviously our person wants to pass along, doesn't want to be the leader of Mandalore. So she's looking for every opportunity she can to pass it off. But at the same time, she does want it to be the right person. So, it's really enjoyable. We have technological MacGuffins going on by something that now goes right after Mandalorian armor. I mean, it was a lot of fun. We have the hokiness with Ezra with the jetpack issues trying to run it. So you get your humor, you get your dark seriousness, you get this whole the whole fight. It's almost like Star Wars encapsulated right in 1 hour for you, and it's. All the characterizations are just great at this point. As we're in season four, we know everyone. We understand the concept. At the same time, they keep pulling our group closer and closer to Star Wars: A New Hope. They keep fitting the puzzle pieces together tighter and tighter and tighter. And I just love it. Like I said, I would pay to watch this in a movie theater because it's such good work. Animation possibly be better. I mean, special effects. I suppose we could have some more, spaceship shots, but they do wonders with what they have. So I'm just ecstatic about it. The whole part of wanting to turn down the leadership of Mandalore is getting a little trite with me, and I believe at least on the first 1 hour that helped me keep my score down just a hair off perfect. It's a lot of fun, and the next hour that we'll talk if we talk about this show or next show, just shows it. This show just keeps getting better and better and better. You only gave it an 8 though, John. So I'm sort of concerned. Where were you falling short with this one?
Quite honestly, I felt like what they needed to do was switch the two-parters around. I think that the biggest problem I had with starting with Heroes of Mandalore instead of In the Name of the Rebellion is that they assumed that you remembered a lot about Sabine and the Mandalorian storyline going into the premiere.
Well, of course I did. question. Is anyone watching the first episode of the fourth season and really not keeping up with the show?
It's one thing to assume that they're at least keeping up with being familiar with it. It's another thing entirely to basically jump right in, assuming they remember extreme details about it. Now, granted, I know as Star Wars fans, we tend to be very hyper-detailed, but I went in going, okay, bring me up to speed into where we're going to be in the fourth season, and instead it felt like this was a two-parter from the middle of the third season. Like, deep in the middle of the third season, where you kind of were deeply invested in what was going on with the Mandalorians, and I was going, wait, where we left things was on Lothal with Thrawn and everything else, and they were going to go meet up with the Rebellion, and basically everything that happened in the third and fourth episode made more sense as the direct kind of next step, and then maybe doing the Mandalorian thing because you were back, back in on track. But it really did feel like the two were switched, and that they kind of started off with focused and very limited scope type of episode. And I actually, recall when it came out, kind of seeing some of the comments, and there were a lot of people taken aback by that. They were like, "Wait, what's going on? I don't remember half of what led into this. That's not the same guy that was the enemy on the Mandalorian side before. What's going on here?" And it just felt like, to me, I was a little bit taken aback by it. As much as I liked it, I also felt like there were certain ways that it kind of demanded that you remember things from the third season as if they just happened yesterday. Where I feel like going in with In the Name of the Rebellion, with the connections to Rogue One, to especially since we know that the arc of the fourth season is essentially bringing you from where they are now to their inclusion in the Rebellion by the time of Rogue One, I thought that just made a lot more sense, or would have made a lot more sense. So that's more the thing is that it kind of came in and it was like, whoa, this is not what I expected at all. And then by the time they got to In the Name of the Rebellion, which even you gave a higher score, at least somewhat agree with me there, that it was better. I feel like that really got the season kicked off on the right foot when they got to that point. So that's more it. I still feel also like there is a little bit of a momentum thing that happens because of that. It's hard to describe, but if you kick us off with something big and directly memorable in terms of the franchise, and then to go into the stuff that is deeply Rebel-centric, I think it just flows better, and that kind of threw me off. But that's about it. I mean, it's above average. It's just the various degrees of above average that we're arguing over here.
Yeah. Did we want to talk about the second one, or were we going to hold off on that?
No, go right ahead.
To me, that was
talking about it. So we might
I know. To me, in the name of the Rebellion, was such a total game changer. We got hints about this, and to some extent, we saw it in Rogue One with Saul Guerrera. But I felt that this episode did so much more of a job to sort of explain some of the divisions and some of the things that are being done. Rather than Saul Guerrera, at least for me, was portrayed in Rogue One as this sole operator who was just doing everything on his own. From this episode, I got the sense that he's running a whole second rebellion, not just one guy on his own trying to do stuff. He's pursuing the Empire on his own way, and not just by himself, but with a large organization in place to do so. And it's it really shows something that we never ever saw in the original movies, was this division amongst the Rebellion. We always assumed that it was this nice, happy group of people meeting on Yavin 4 that all got together, and they're all going to kick the Empire's ass and destroy the Death Star and blah, blah, blah. But now we're seeing that they're extremely divided in not only in methodology, but even all these little sectional divisions. We look at Ezra complaining about why nobody's helping Lothal when that's what he was promised to get done, and Mon Mothma's trying to explain it to him. But this is all indicative of divisions. I get the sense that this was not the first time Mon Mothma has had to make this speech to somebody to try and keep the groups together as a whole, and it really sort of adds an extra layer and depth to the Rebellion side of the story that I never fully appreciated before, that it was made up of all these disparate elements that really didn't have much in common and had a lot of their own self-interests at heart as they were going forward with all this. And It just literally blew me away. I almost gave it a perfect score. I'm not sure what it needed to go all the way to a 10 for me, but I can't imagine the show being much better than this. We had just about everything you can think of, the high moral dilemmas. We had really interesting fight scenes with them being knocked down. Chopper is just hilarious as always. I can't imagine the shock with our two members being shot by Gerrera because he was changing the agenda around for what he wanted to do. He wanted to find out what was going on. While we had known about Kyber crystals from Rogue One, this was the first time we were really ever seeing or getting this level of detail within Rebels itself, which is, I think, supposed to still predate Rogue One, in which case this is, they were ones getting primary information for what we would see later to follow in the movies. Like I said, I just thought this was amazing. We had Coden, really sort of stepping up as the moral authority of the show. And I was just sitting here with my mouth open as I was watching this show. It was just incredible for me. I realized that you weren't quite as blown away by it, John, but I really thought the story crafting and the elements that they were trying to get across were amazing for a cartoon.
No, like I said, I think part of the problem was basically just the timing in relation to what happened previously. I think that this is the direct follow-up from what happened with Thrawn on Lothal. I mean, even Ezra, immediately at the beginning, his challenges to Mon Mothma was all about, hey, we just got here from what happened on Lothal. Why are you not going back and resolving that problem? And it became this whole conflict point. So it felt so much more natural to me. I really did enjoy it. I think the only problem is that I still feel like what's going on with Saul doesn't quite line up with what we see in Rogue One, if that's not that far in the future. Which the implication here is that it's maybe a year or maybe less in the future. So
yeah, it definitely seemed like it was supposed to be further down. Yeah.
Yes. So I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect there because Saul seems like he's so much further down the crazy train ride by the time of Rogue One. But I have to say, though, that the first half of that of In the Name of the Rebellion was written by Gary Whitta, who wrote Rogue One. So it makes perfect sense that there.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
oh.
It makes a lot of sense that there is a feeling of
like a puzzle fitting together so well. Yeah.
That's why the Saul thing kind of sticks out, because everything else was so in line with it that it's like, wait, I can't see that guy being, the crazy guy that we see in Rogue One. Just yet. I think they kind of allude to his motivations at the end of this two-parter, but at the same time, I feel like there's a little bit work that needs to be done. I have a feeling we're going to see more pretty soon. Before the end of the season, definitely, we're going to see more of Saul. Let's see. But those two two-parters, in isolation, both knocked it out of the park. I just feel like the way that it presents the early part of the fourth season is it was totally off. The weird thing is that technically speaking, Star Wars Rebels is like kind of a Monday night show, but is actually available sometimes late Sunday, so kind of confusing. But anyway, Monday night shows, Supergirl is back. And how do you feel this? Have you been keeping up with it at all?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I'm current with it. I don't know. I feel they're shaking up the show just to shake it up, and I feel they're straying a little too far from the formula. And honestly, nobody wants a mopey Supergirl, and I still feel like we have that to some extent. Kara Danvers was a very important part of this show, and for all intents and purposes, have her disappear for this season so far. I miss that character.
I can understand that.
I'm not saying I need the fuddling one who's, running in with a tray of coffee into the office, but, even the interactions with her sister and Jimmy, even in a non-romantic nature, it's all sort of gone. And that was such a fundamental part of this show, is seeing her human side. And as of episode two episodes in, I really haven't seen it yet. And I want that character back. We've already lost Kat. We've lost Snapper Carr. Who are we gonna? I don't want to lose Kara Danvers too. So I'm really hoping they bring her back.
Now, what I found interesting here was that, I mean, that third episode with the Martians, as much as it was supposed to be, I guess, a little bit, pulling on the heartstrings, I felt like having it be the Martians actually made it hard for me to get into it. It felt kind of so disconnected from everything else that I was just like, can you give me something that I'm actually, like, I felt like the stuff with Alex and Maggie was a lot more engaging than the Martian storyline.
That was nice. And to me, one of the problems I had with the Martians was the back and forth. Why Martians on Mars would need to be in human form. I know to save budget, I understand that. But at the same time, to have them flip flop, okay, they're going to turn into Martians when they're fighting, and then they're going to change back to humans when they're not. Just to me, kept taking me out. Yeah, exactly. Kept taking me out of it. The only point I would concede them would be to have John Jones be in human form, just to allow the actor to have that role, without all the makeup and everything like that. I could see as an actor wanting to do that without all the prosthetics on him.
Yeah, that's fair.
To really emote. So that scene I would have almost been able to take. But the whole rest of the hodgepodge, I'll even give him the 1950s car that transformed. That's fine. I got no problem with that. But yeah, the shifting back and forth of white Martians on Mars into humans just sort of left me scratching my head as to, come on, guys, you made them up already. You couldn't have shot an extra few days with the makeup on. I didn't quite get that part. I did enjoy how the father was denying it was John. After all, it had been hundreds of years. I thought the actor portrayed very well his first his anger, and then finally, as he said that he was broken, is just his despair and grief. I thought that came across very well, and I could even feel John being saddened and hurt by that, his father's expression of that. And I thought the whole scene worked very well between those two. I'm still kind of questioning why the staff that was not supposed to be given back to white Martians was given back to white Martians, even though it was never supposed to be given to them. So I'm sort of scratching my head. I know it was somewhere in the religion talk somewhere at some point, but it sort of went over my head.
I don't know. The Martian thing is just not what I'm really the most engaged in on the show. So an episode devoted a lot to that didn't do a lot for me. The other show, and I'm surprised, I don't see that you have anything on here for this, and maybe I'm wrong. Am I looking at the right thing? Yeah, The Gifted, which is the X-Men-related show. I feel like it continues to be a really good show. I mean, it's above
really?
In
okay.
my mind.
Because after Legion, I was sort of ambivalent about any X-Men show.
Oh, this is far more like what you are probably thinking of.
Okay.
They give a really nice explanation early in the first episode that the X-Men and Brotherhood have disappeared. So now they are in essentially a world where the Sentinel program has taken full control. So it's a big step towards the Days of Future Past type of situation. Mm-hmm. So you're dealing with a mutant underground and some familiar faces, but for the most part, it's essentially a family that has discovered that their kids are mutants, and they have to figure out what to do about that now. Oh, and they were also heavily involved with the Sentinel program. So
of course.
They're learning a few things about, we supported this and we thought that it was this way, but now that we have, so there's a very classic X-Men type of atmosphere to it. I think for TV, it actually is some pretty strong effects. I really like the cast so far. Polaris in particular is gorgeous. And really disturbing, which is great. I think that it's one weakness is that the parents in the family, who were involved with some of the things that were going on with the Sentinel program, that they're just a little naive, and they kind of continue to be naive almost for the purpose of giving them an arc for the first season. So it's almost like, guys, can you just move this along, because it's not saying a lot of good things about them that they don't understand their previous actions have wrought. But otherwise, I would say no, this is not Legion, where it is a very stylized show. This is about as straight up an X-Men show as you're ever going to get on TV. And I think it actually is better than some of the movies, especially things like Last Stand. I think it actually stays right at the heart of what makes the X-Men franchise or the X-Men comics so relevant to so many people. I enjoy it a lot. I think that it does get lost in the shuffle a little bit, but I think that it is one I always look forward to each week. All right, and then we have the Tuesday night shows, which could be like night and day when it comes to your opinions there, Gary. I'm a little more, you know, sanguine with it, I guess. But let's start with The Flash, because we both like The Flash a lot more right now. And I have to say, right now, I feel like The Flash has kind of regained itself after a very sketchy third season. I think the fourth season has actually been really good so far. What do you think?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think we can both agree that the whole Savitar plotline went too long in season three, and that Eternal.
Did you know Iris was going to die? I mean, I think it's been more than five.
I didn't even know she was sick. Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, that constant moroseness for a show that is typically characterized by lightheartedness. I think, yeah, it did have a negative effect on how a lot of people were enjoying it. You know, we're used to that grimness in Arrow, but not here in The Flash, especially not for what amounted to, as far as I could tell, almost the complete season. And so I'm glad to see that a few different things, that we're getting some lightness back into this, but at the same time we are still dealing with some of the ramifications of him of Barry choosing to leave. You know, Iris basically, you know, still upset that he just left without, you know, really going through with her, even though at the time she waved and kissed them goodbye.
Yeah.
And didn't say anything at the moment, but I can understand 6 months later being remorseful. And, you know, anybody I think who's in a relationship, I think, can definitely feel some of what Iris was going through at that point after not, you know, being abandoned for over six months. So
I took that was that it was Iris basically saying, "What, you believed me? Didn't you understand that what I really meant was I didn't want you to go?" Sorry, Alexa. But I take it as a slightly passive aggressive thing on Iris's part. It was like, "Well, yeah, I told you, okay, you could leave, but what I really wanted you to realize is I didn't want you to go anywhere." But anyway, yeah, I kind of got that Iris was just way over the top a little bit in that, at least in some respects. But at the same time, I feel like it's calmed down already this season. And man, that third episode, I know you didn't like it quite as much as I did, but I thought it was hilarious. The comedy this season seems to be much more on point, and much better integrated into things. It's a little more lighthearted than it was. It's not as dour. I guess I liked the adorkable adversary, so to speak, in the third episode.
I enjoyed it too. I just thought it was for The Flash, I thought it was a little over the top. I would expect that from Legends, I think, more than with The Flash. And so it seems
maybe they were trying a little hard to kind of get back to that sense of fun. But that's, you know, that's what I missed last season. So if they want to go a little overboard with it, I'm fine, because that's at least they're going back in the direction that I think we both agree they need to find, which is not trying to be out.
I agree. And it's nice to have, geez, I hope I get this straight, Harry back.
Harry.
It was nice. It's nice to have him sort of back into the fold again. And it's interesting that they're phasing out Kid Flash. For as best I can tell, he's basically leaving, going to a different city. And I guess, you know, in a lot of ways he is redundant, because even if the Flash is sick, broke his leg, doing something else, you have Wally, who for all intents and purposes is faster than him. Perhaps a little less experienced, but generally faster than him and able to do pretty much everything Barry does. So I can see the need to actually push him off, much like as they had to push off Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know they wanted to have him there, but do you think that's the right thing to do away with him? He always seemed like a bit of a third wheel.
I'm not sure.
Now, it's a shame, though, because I like the character, but as a powered superhero, I mean, I like Wally, but as a powered superhero, I see the redundancy, and it doesn't make Flash special. And when Flash is in a tight situation, it doesn't ramp up the tension, because you have somebody else that can go save somebody or whatever, defuse the bomb. And so I see from a plot point of view the need to get rid of having an additional speedster on the team. I am going to miss Wally as a character. I love the West dynamic, family dynamic with him in there. And I like the interactions with the character himself. So I'll probably miss Wally much more than I will miss Kid Flash.
I feel like Wally has now been relegated, because of all the things you just mentioned, to the being a player in the whole Arrowverse or DCW. And my worry is that waters him down to being a bit player. And like you said, he's kind of redundant now, which is unfortunate. And if he's just going to show up every so often on Legends, look what Legends did to Malcolm Merlyn. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. But that brings us to Legends, which is really the last show to talk about right this week. Gary, you continue to be really not that happy with Legends anymore. I'm to the point where, as I mentioned before, I don't even think of it as being a true, like, in canon, in continuity show anymore. It's just kind of the goofy, playful, all, you know, gloves off. We can do anything we want because we'll just reset the timeline eventually anyway, kind of show from DCW. And it's just kind of trying to be goofy fun. And when I just watch it as goofy fun, I can enjoy it. But I'll be honest with you, so that you feel, we're not that far apart. If I was trying to reconcile this with everything else going on, I'd have the same problem I did with the second season, which is I can't reconcile this as being part of the DCW. It doesn't fit for me. Which is funny because some people I know say that Supergirl doesn't seem to fit with the rest of the shows. And I disagree completely with that. I think it's just that they keep that at a proper remove so that her power levels don't render the other people and the other shows irrelevant. But Legends of Tomorrow is so messy in terms of continuity and everything else that it actually is a universe-breaking show for me. So I cannot think of it as being in continuity, or it ruins the entire DCW for me. That might be more of an indictment than even you were about to give it.
So. No, it's just that I agree with what you're saying, number one, it's so ludicrous that it doesn't fit in, but it barely seems consistent with itself.
Yes.
Like, for example, wasn't she White Canary? I can't remember the last time I've actually seen her do a Sonic Scream. I think it was like 2 seasons ago.
Yeah, she's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what. I think it's just more a name than anything anymore.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time they used it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they call her Sarah all the time, and she's
or
kind
Captain
of the leader
now.
Yeah, yes, that's true. She's kind of evolved.
That's one minor harp. I still miss Snark tremendously. I really
oh,
wish.
Oh, yes.
I really thought that he would be a strong number two, where the Ray Palmer character, I guess, now has, at least in my mind, is sort of ramped up to that number two as far as screen time issues.
True. And Ray is very is not nearly as strong of a number two character. I don't think he has the presence of a Snart or even a Mick for that matter. But Mick is in exactly where he should be, which is in the sarcastic, hilariously old school type villain type of mentality, and I think that he actually works. I really do have a problem with, as you said, like Ray. What? Like half the time I don't even know where he's coming from. I feel like they write a lot of the characters, actually, other than the ones that are very easily kind of pigeonholed into their little part of the routine. Like Victor Garber's character, whose name is Professor Stein. Very easy to figure out where he's coming from because he comes from the same direction all the time. Same thing with Mick. Sarah, for all intent purposes, you can pretty much bet she's either going to hit on one of the supporting actresses for the episode or hit everyone else, or both. That's about what her thing is. But, like, Ray, what is his purpose? The dude, like, Captain Steel or whatever it is the
Steel,
most bland character I've seen on one of these shows in a while. I really just feel like the show doesn't have a direction. It's just there. And it's really unfortunate because the second season started off in such a way. And actually when it hit its stride, it was its own thing. It was funny. It was lighthearted and didn't take itself all that seriously. But it was still kind of within the same world. And what really broke it for me is when they had the episodes with the villains and they started playing slapstick comedy with Malcolm Merlyn. And since then, I feel like things have started to fall off a cliff. Like I said, in terms of being believable within the universe, if I just watch it as a DC comedy show, okay. But like you said, from episode to episode, I actually agree with you. It's not consistent.
Yeah, so
you have to take it one step at a time, because if you try to start linking things together and making sense of it, no.
Well, then I found I enjoyed the arc nature of the storylines, even as they were bumping from time to time or whatever. The ongoing villain chase or item quest was a nice long-going format for them. At least, even if something got hokey for an episode, you felt like things were moving forward. Mm. And I'm not feeling that right now. So.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. So I think of all the shows in the DCW right now, the one that I could easily drop without too much sadness would be Legends. Mm. as much as fun as I have with it, I really wouldn't miss it that much. I kind of hold out because of the crossover that's going to take place. But now I'm more and more worried about the crossover, because I think that they're biting off more than they can chew, and I feel like tying it even tighter to Legends is actually, like I said, it takes away from the rest of it. Think about it. Arrow takes place in the same universe as this? Yeah, it's sometimes hard to reconcile. It's a victim of its own success. Everybody said they liked the lighter side of the Flash, and so they actually kind of bet more on that with Legends, and I don't think it's working right now as well. I'm enjoying it episode to episode, but even even I think, wow, this is a pretty disposable thing at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, wow, there's a lot on right now, so we covered a lot. Any last thoughts for this week, Gary?
I feel like the DC universe has been letting me down lately. So I'm hoping some of those shows turn around. Just for the last 2 weeks, Rebels has been my watch it live show, or at least as soon as possible, because it's been so amazing.
I'll say this. Right now, Marvel isn't really, the Marvel Studios shows aren't really bringing it when it comes to things like Inhumans. But I have to say, Gary, maybe take a look at The Gifted, because I think if you watch that and then you looked at it and compared it against the DCW, it kind of puts the lie to the idea that Marvel can't hang with DC on TV.
Oh.
I think The Gifted has more in common with a show like Arrow or The Flash in its better incarnations than where the DCW falls right now.
Huh. Okay.
But that's it for me, too. I mean, there's a lot on right now, and we are trying to get back on track. Hopefully, we'll see as November goes through what our scheduling is like. But certainly continue to tune in. So any last thoughts in general, Gary?
Beyond no. I'm just glad the shows are picking up.
Yes, indeed. And we'll be back soon. Until then. And we are back with episode 835 of The Critical Myth. John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and boy, we've had a busy show week this week.
That's right. We're actually going to have 3 episodes. Now, what we originally did is when we were recording our second episode, which was the episodic discussion one, we just kept going and going and going, and there was never a really natural place for us to just say, hey, shouldn't we stop and do a third show? And then
I got carried away, John. I'm sorry.
We all did. So, yeah, what we wound up doing is when I was editing in, I actually split it in two. So this introduction is essentially to say, yep, we're picking right up in the middle of a conversation. So we're not exactly even sure where this is going to drop in. But Gary, why don't you just give a quick spoiler alert just before we kind of break back into the conversation?
Oh yeah, as we talk about shows, including. I think we're going to focus a bit on the DCW for a little while. We're going to go into things that have happened, people who have lived, died, and were otherwise affected in their lives. We might even talk about a transforming car. However, when we do this, we are just doing it to have a frank and honest discussion. If we are spoiling anything for anyone, we apologize in advance, but we feel it's important to not gloss over some of the more important events of these shows. So we want to share them with you. And as always, you're welcome to share your own opinions on anything we discuss by emailing us or contacting us otherwise.
Very good. That's just about as thorough as we could ever imagine we needed. So, all right, we are going to go ahead and jump right into the rest of this week's episodic discussion. Thank you for listening.